Prelude. A room in Sophia's house. The main color is a yellow-red. Sophia, her two children, a boy and a girl, then Estella. The children sing, Sophia accompanying them on the piano. The light of the sun is flooding the realms of space. The song of birds resounds through fields of air. The tender plants spring forth from Mother Earth, and human souls rise up with grateful hearts to all the spirits of the world. Sophia. Now go to your room, children, and think about the words we have been practicing. Parenthesis, Sophia leads the children to the door. Estella enters. Parenthesis. Estella. I am so happy to see you, Sophia, dear. I hope I'm not intruding. Sophia. Not at all, Estella. I'm glad you've come. Parenthesis, she invites Estella to sit down and takes a seat. Parenthesis. Estella. Have you good news from your husband? Sophia. Quite good. He writes that he's finding the conference of psychologists most interesting, although the way some of the great problems are approached is not very intriguing. With his training in observing people, he's especially aware of one thing, how a kind of spiritual short-sightedness prevents modern psychologists from looking clearly at the essential riddles. Estella. Does he intend to speak about something important himself? Sophia. Yes, on a subject that seems to him, and also to me, very important. However, he hardly expects any results from it, in view of the biased attitude of his listeners. Estella. Sophia, a special wish brings me here. Couldn't we spend the evening together? Tonight is the performance of The Uprooted. Nothing would please me more than going to the play with you. Sophia. But you've forgotten, dear. Just tonight my society is giving the performance we've been preparing so long. Estella. Oh, yes. That slipped my mind. I should have liked so much to spend the evening with you, my dearest friend. I was rejoicing with all my heart at the thought of having you beside me to look into the real depths of our present-day life. But your world of ideas, which is so alien to me, will destroy even the last remnant of our friendship that has bound us together since our school days. Sophia. You said that so often, and yet again and again you've had to admit that our opinions need not raise any barriers between our feelings for each other. They are still the same as they were in our younger years together. Estella. It's true, I have often said so, and yet it constantly makes me bitter to see with every year how your feelings become more and more estranged from everything in life that seems to me worthwhile. Sophia. Dear Estella, we could mean much more to each other just by a mutual respect for the differences in our dispositions and the directions they've taken. Estella. Cold reasoning often tells me you are right. But oh, something in me rebels against the way you look at life. Sophia. Honestly, if you would only admit to yourself that you're really asking me to deny the very core of my nature. Estella. Yes, I'd admit even that, if it were not for one thing. I can well imagine that people who think differently can very well come together with complete sympathy. But actually the direction of your ideas makes you assume a certain superiority. Other people can exchange their views and realize that they do indeed differ in their standpoints, which still are equally justified. Your view, however, claims to be more profound than all the rest, which it looks on simply as products of a lower level of human development. Sophia, you should know from what we have discussed so often that no one who shares my views evaluates a person according to his opinions or his knowledge. Estella, that sounds very well, but it doesn't rid me of a certain suspicion. I cannot close my eyes to the fact that a view of the world, which ascribes to itself unlimited depths, must lead to a certain superficiality. Just think of those of your friends who try to impress with a mere pretense of profundity. You are much too dear a friend for me to point out to you those fellow thinkers who swear by your ideas and display their spiritual arrogance in the worst possible way. At the same time, the empty triteness of their minds shows through every word and action. But I won't remind you how callous and unfeeling some of your adherents have been toward their fellow men. At least your greatness of soul could never keep you from the duties our daily life demands of anyone who, in the best sense of the word, can be called good. Sophia. But you can also say that we make every effort not to overestimate an individual merely because he has been allowed to serve our particular view of life. Estella, and now you are going to desert me tonight, just when we can experience true art speaking out about life. This shows me that when it comes to appreciating art, even in you, your worldview produces a definite superficiality, if you'll forgive my saying so. Sophia, where do you find the superficiality in us? Estella, I can say at this special moment that I have now become aware of what genuine art is. I think I understand how it lays hold of the very essence of our lives, and I shudder at the thought of what you prefer, Sophia, to this interest in art that is involved with life itself. Your kind of drama seems to me nothing more than an old-fashioned, didactic, allegorical kind of presentation. Instead of living people, you display puppet-like types, indulging in symbolical events. Sophia, Estella dear, you don't want to understand that a wealth of life can be found exactly where you see nothing but a web of abstract thoughts. And that there may be people who call your living reality actually poverty-stricken, if it is not measured by the source it springs from. This may sound harsh, but our friendship calls for unvarnished honesty. The spirit means to you, as to so many others, only the instrument of knowledge. You are conscious only of the thought aspect of spirit. You have no conception of the living, creative spirit that forms human beings with the same elemental power as the germinating forces in nature form a seed. Like so many others, what you call unsophisticated and original in art, for instance, to me denies the spirit. But our attitude toward the world unites fully conscious inner activity with the power of spontaneity. We consciously absorb whatever is unsophisticated, and do not rob it of its refreshing richness and originality. Estella, all that is far removed from everything that daily pleads with us for compassion and active concern. Sophia, for you, it's enough to have merely reflective thoughts about an individual human being, that he is the result of the conditions around him. You don't want to see that thought can dive down into the creative spirit to touch the very source of existence, and then emerges to reveal itself as the actual creative germinating force. As little as the forces of the seed have to teach the plant to grow, but rather unfold within it as a living entity, so little do our ideas teach. They pour themselves into our being, life enkindling, life bestowing. Estella, you know me long enough to be aware of how I freed myself from a way of living and from thoughts which only follow the dictation of tradition and conventional opinions. I've tried to understand why so many people seem to suffer undeservedly. I've made an effort to get to know the heights and depths of existence. I've also asked the help of science as far as it's been accessible to me and obtained helpful answers. Sophia, and it is to spirit-oriented ideas that I owe everything that gives life its meaning. I owe to them not only courage, but also insight and strength. They give me the hope that I can make of my children human beings who are not merely capable and useful in external life, in the conventional sense, but who are able to sustain an inner tranquility and contentment in themselves. Let me say one more thing. I'm quite certain that the dreams you share with so many others can only materialize if men succeed in connecting what they call reality and life with those deeper experiences which you've often termed fantastic, wild imaginings. Estella, to me it is clear that only in art can we experience the true, the higher reality. I seem to feel the pulse beat of our time when I allow such art to challenge me. Sophia, it may seem strange to you when I confess that I find much that to you appears genuine art to be only fruitless criticism of life. For no hunger is stilled, no tears are dried, no source of moral degradation is uncovered when merely the outer appearance of hunger or tear-stained faces or degraded characters are shown on the stage. How this is usually done is unspeakably distant from the real depths of life and the true relationships between living beings. Estella, I understand what you are trying to say, but it only shows too clearly that you prefer to indulge in fantasy rather than face the truths of life. We really go in two different directions in this. So I'll have to be resigned to do without my friend tonight. She rises. I must go. I think we should still remain the same good friends. Sophia, we should indeed. During the last words, Sophia leads Estella to the door. Curtain. End of prelude, but there's a footnote. The original extremely long single speeches have been divided and somewhat rearranged by the translators in order to come closer to the conversational style of the modern stage. This has been done only for the prelude. Nothing has been omitted, except in the title of the play, which Estella describes the disinherited from body and soul, here rendered as the uprooted. A first version of the prelude will be found in the appendix. End of the prelude of the Portal of Initiation.